Spring into deals for seasonal savings. Shop select 1-pint annuals for just $1. Plus, get a free additional Cobalt 40-volt 2-amp-hour battery when you buy select Cobalt 40-volt trimmer and blower combo kit. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 5/6. Annuals offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 16. This week, we got to be a fly on the wall while the Bobs, Bob Ruff and Bob Mata, caught up to discuss multiple cases. This was a fantastic conversation to be a part of. And before we get into our discussion, do we have any housekeeping?
Yeah, Janet and I talked about a couple things. One that I do remember is, remember Underestimated is out on Wednesday, Episode 2 of Season 2 comes out. And got a special treat coming for you guys. I think, didn't I have the class on the Underestimated class on last year on the podcast for an interview?
Did you?
I remember you talking to them, but I cannot remember. Here's the problem. I've listened to both.
Yeah, exactly. This
and their podcast, and I can't remember if it was on theirs or
I definitely exactly. wasn't on theirs, I think, okay. Because I was going to go back and look at that and put that out for our Throwback Thursday this week, that mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
Because that was last year's class. This year, coming out on Sunday, we just recorded it today, I sat down with four of my students, one from each of the groups, and we had a chat about what they've got in store this year and this season and what the process has been like. If you guys want to hear me get picked on and roasted by teenagers,
it's and a great, we do. Rest assured we do.
You'll see when you listen to it. It's like, it starts. They're all so nervous to be on this show. And so everybody's like, yes, and then I did this, and they're like scared, nervous, and then once we like get into the conversation at the end, by the end of the episode, they're all picking on me. They're perfectly in their comfort zone. Just text Erica. I'm like, when you edit it, there's some silliness in there, but just leave it. They just make sure it's in there. So that'll be fun. So your Gracie's on there.
Good.
Colton.
Chelsea.
Colton, who you've seen.
Chelsea back. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Colton,
Chelsea
yeah.
is back. Chelsea nice. Is on it. And Colton from the advisory meeting. And then someone you're not familiar with, Tegan, who's doing the Kim Laro case, is on there. So. Yeah, should be a. It was a fun conversation. You guys get to hear, you know, directly from the students and the that have created. And keep in mind when you listen to that show, when you listen to Underestimated, it is 100% produced by them. The research, the writing, the recording, the editing, the music, everything intentionally. Because you know, I always want to like, you know. Get in there and be like, well, maybe you could adjust the music, and I'll make suggestions to them. But I'm very careful that the whole process is like, no, what you get is teenagers who have never done anything like this before putting this out, and it's 100% made by them. And I'm just so proud of them. They've all done such an awesome job. Can't wait for you guys to listen. Can't wait for you guys to hear from them. So that is coming up on Sunday. And perhaps if my memory serves,
mm-hmm.
and I had them last year, I'm going to throw out for our little Throwback Thursday episode.
16, 14.
Excellent.
So I did indeed.
16, episode 14.
Yeah.
So I got it now.
Last year.
Sorry.
Thanks, Zach.
I got it written down for you.
No, that's great.
I don't remember. I can confirm. I did some checking this week as far as the West Memphis 3 DNA. Because I want to make, I'm like, did somebody just forget to tell me? Is something going on? So I did some checking on that and found out that no, like everybody is just as frustrated as me. There, it's just the testing is just not done yet. We're just waiting on Bodhi to finish testing and give us results that we were going to give us by the first of the year.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll come soon. Can I put a link to their podcast? Yeah, I'll put a link to their podcast in. It'll be for sure in Sunday's episode. We'll have it on there. And if I remember to give it to Erica, I'll have her put it in the follow up as well. But on any podcast platform, if you just look up Underestimated, they're ranked pretty high, so it usually comes up pretty quick. It's a maroon logo that says Underestimated with a little, I think there's a bobcat on it somewhere, maybe, perhaps. Don't remember.
Great.
What else did I say that I wanted to...
I think just Mata.
You're
doing
on
Mata's...
Oh, yeah. So if you guys are listening to this on Friday, you missed it, but I think you can watch the replay or listen to it. He usually puts his live streams out on his audio feed, right, at some point?
Yeah, sometimes it takes a minute, so it's usually faster to just go to YouTube and... check it out there.
Yeah. So I'm going to be on Defense Diaries YouTube on Tuesday doing a live stream with Bob where he's going to be interviewing me talking about, he wants to talk about the Bynum case and just whatever. You guys know how it is when me and when there's a meeting of the Bobs, we just get to yapping about whatever comes up. So that's going to be on Tuesday night. That should still be available on Friday if you want to check that out.
Nice. I think that's all I had for your housekeeping. It'd be fun to have a means of kind of discussing Underestimated. I don't know if maybe next follow up, because you will have had the kids on and people have had a little more time to listen to the first couple of episodes, maybe we could just build a little time in next week to kind of talk about what's aired so far and give the opportunity for people to ask questions here and stuff like that.
Yeah. The Jeanette Robertson, Chelsea just did two episodes on that. So the second one's coming out Wednesday this week. So that'll be done. And I'm thinking about, because the kids are all anxious now, because so they all have their first three episodes done and they're working on their last three, but they're all waiting for their episodes to air and they're anxiously waiting. So I may throw the first episode of Tegan's groups out on Friday to speed it up a little bit, to start getting them out a little faster. And then we'll have that to talk about, because that's a case that probably most people have never even heard of. And it's super interesting. And it goes, that entire group is new to the class. So we got a few people that are returns from last week. So they've never done anything like this before. And they like took a missing persons case that like led to a connection to another victim that led to a potential possible serial killer that led to like five other victims that are all, and they're just like, it just keeps going and going and going and going and going. So it's super interesting. So I may drop that one for you guys on Friday or Saturday or something.
Excellent. That would be very cool. Well, I definitely listened to the first episode of this season and it was very moving. I mean, there's so much I want to ask and talk about, but I guess this isn't the place or time to do it, but
we'll do it next week. Next week we'll talk about
it. That sounds good.
Yeah. That'll give everybody a chance to catch up.
Right on. Right on. Well, let's get into your conversation that you had with Mr. Bob Otta this last Sunday. Yeah. You covered a lot of ground. So neither one of you went to that, and you could not go to the Innocence Conference in Chicago.
I don't know if Bob did or not. I haven't talked to him since then. Okay. But yeah, he was trying to find a way in last I talked to him.
I hope he made it over there. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. Is someone going to give you more notice? Like, it feels like you should be there.
Well, I think what's happened is I've gotten like personal invites to it year after year after year. And I always turn it like innocent. All the IPTX folks are always trying to get me to go down to it wherever it's at. And I think it's kind of like a lot of things where I've just turned them down so many times they stopped asking, because it seems because this one is, it's right. And also nobody thinks of Chicago as being, because they're like, you know, when they know I'm from Michigan, people don't make that connection that I'm just so close to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just don't like me anymore. Could be either way. I don't know.
I think if you can never make a thing, people just assume like, oh, he's never going to be able to make it. And they just kind of, you know, stop trying. But what else did you guys cover? You talked a little about the Bynum case. It sounded like Bob was listening to that season, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got some good spoilers, in my opinion, about murder on Songbird Road, not Lane.
Yeah, Road.
the couple of updates there. And we do have a listener question about that we'll come back to. You guys talked about the Faust case and True Allele, which I thought was really interesting. And it kind of caused me to do a little bit more of a side investigation, just reading more about it and stuff. And to be honest with you, you guys actually covered a lot of like the meat and potatoes of what the controversy around it is and kind of what it all means, and the fact that it keeps coming up in litigation, in appeals and in court cases where either someone is a law enforcement agency wants to use it and that's objected to by the defense, or judges ruling that they have to turn over information about the source code, or, you know, it's all. But I find all of that really, really fascinating. And I'm so curious to see where if it will go anywhere with this, like if being able to attack that will be a thing, and what's going to happen with other cases for which the true allele privacy issue is like being litigated right now. Because it does seem to me like it's one of those things where, like, especially because it gets used in exonerations, but also like wanting to find the right perpetrator. My head initially is like, oh, it sounds like it's probably doing a good thing. It's probably good. But then when you really read into it and you're like, God, that is intense. Like the idea that you can't check it, that as a defense, as the, like it feels like that's a huge black hole problem for just the way our legal system should be set up. So
yeah. And I don't know that I even fully understand. Zach, did you get a good grasp on what it was? Because I was like, still like, what do you mean you're using predictive modeling?
I don't really understand it. I get the idea that it's new technology, and I think that it could be very helpful. I mean, that's what we're always looking for, right? We're always looking for new technology to advance where we're going. Yeah. I mean, that's just society, right? So I get the idea of it. And like Jana said, it could be very useful, but not being able to check it seems strange. But also just being saying that, well, you can't check it, that also doesn't mean it's wrong.
Right.
That's the
but
hard
how
part.
Do you know?
Yeah. How do you know? How do you challenge it? But then there's the, like you said, there's the other side of it is, like I said, I know very little about the Edric Faust case. I researched it a bit before I talked to Bob and heard from Bob. But like I said in that episode, it was like, well, if this technology, if it's modeling happened to, maybe he's innocent. Bob didn't go so far as to say he thinks he is, but just that there's problems with the true allele is like, you know, as I said in the episode, like, well, what are the odds that it came up with a profile of, you know, trillions of possibilities, and it happened to be a guy with a record of violence who lives right there? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that seems like...
that seems super compelling.
That was a part that I was very concerned about listening to the episode at first. And I'm really, really happy you guys talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first when Bob was talking, I do understand that maybe this guy didn't get a fair trial. And there's a lot going on with the trial portion.
Yeah.
But then you brought up the idea of like, yeah, but his DNA, like they found his DNA, or this came up with his DNA, and he happens to be there, and he happens to be a violent offender. Like,
yeah,
that's not necessarily coincidence that this happened.
Yeah.
So I'm happy because I was worried at first that it was just kind of leaning like, oh, he didn't get a fair trial. And we don't know about this. And I'm like, it's still a very weird happenstance.
Well, and that's one of the reasons. And I hate that Bob gets as much. And, you know, I do too. But that he gets the kind of shit that he gets, that everybody's like, oh, he's just a shill for the defense. Because like I noticed very much that Bob, he's not saying, well, because of this, he's clearly innocent.
No, in
I've
fact,
seen a
he
lot
said
of
the
people
opposite.
That are pushing that.
He
said the
he
opposite.
Did.
He said it degrades when I believe someone is factually innocent. That is when I say I believe this person is innocent.
Yeah.
Not guilty. Not, you know, because if I say that all the time and I don't mean it, especially if I don't know and I can't say it with certainty, it degrades every time I say it. It has less value. So, you know, that he was unwilling to say and not interested in saying, like, he's not going to die on a hill that he doesn't feel is like a clear cut case of innocence.
Well, and kudos to both Bobs, because you did both say that. You both said, like, maybe he didn't get a fair trial, but this, I'm also not saying he's innocent. But my scare of the episode was the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, was that first 10 minutes where you were talking, because that didn't come out until 20 minutes in. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
So,
right.
I mean, definitely. Kudos to both of you for saying that. But that's where I was at the beginning. I'm like, what's happening here? Like this, I don't know. I don't understand the case, yeah. But also like, this seems strange.
Well, it was one of those where I researched, and it's funny because I had the same, if you remember way back when I had him on talking about Murder on Songbird Road the first time.
Yes.
Where I was like, I mean, I don't know everything about the case. I read about it and I'm not convinced that she's innocent. And then, of course, you know, he promised there would be more coming out. And I'm still not convinced that she's innocent, but I'm certainly compelled by, especially some of the spoilers that he put out that we haven't heard her from the podcast yet. That, well, I don't want to get it because we do have one question, I think, about this. So we'll wait for that.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts, Zach, about the episode itself that you want to talk about?
I think I have a thought that's going to come up with the Songbird Road question.
Okay.
So I'd rather get into it there. I don't want to skip ahead.
Okay.
I don't think I have anything else with Faust. Like I said, I'm so confused with the true allele thing. I think it's intriguing, but I wish that there was more. I wish I was smarter and could understand it better. That's my biggest.
But Zach, you're honestly, like, that's the problem, is that like a lot of people don't understand it. Not just you. Defense attorneys don't understand it. People who are trained in law enforcement. I mean, that's one of the things I was reading about, is that like there is one area. I'm trying to remember what state it was, but there was an area. It might have been New York. There was an area where they discovered that someone had like a bunch of law enforcement guys who were supposed to be getting trained on how to use and interpret true allele were cheating on the test. Yeah. State police investigating cheating allegations on DNA tests. This is in Schenectady. State police are looking into Madeline Rivera from Spectrum Local News. State police are looking into whether or not several of their forensic analysts cheated during a proficiency exam for a new DNA test technology that a local lawyer says shouldn't be allowed in New York courts. They're challenging the validity of true allele, accusations that a dozen state police, now this year, I'm not saying this is proven, I'm reading this article, dozen state police forensic analysts cheated during their training of true allele. The allegations were brought up in Schenectady court, transferred to the court. People who are using this don't understand it, says the lawyer, and they're cheating because they don't understand it. So it's not, potentially not just you, Zach, and then that there, you know, you guys talked about on the episode that the people who are authorized, when the argument comes up, well, somebody should be able to check this work, then the only people that True Allele's founder is willing to let check the work have an association, a direct association and benefit to gain from agreeing with True Allele because they are linked to True Allele in some way. And so I think those are the right questions that should be asked. This is what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be testing those weak areas. And what I do think is interesting about, and then we move on, is just from my reading about it, I think the biggest fear is when you have a suspect and the suspect is, you're sort of asking the court, like True Allele, hey, can you confirm if this DNA might be our suspect?
Right.
That feels really dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because then you've got that confirmation bias kicking in. But when it is something like this, where it's someone that was not on the radar at all, and somehow this algorithm was able to like fill in the gaps statistically with like millions and millions of possible DNA combos, and they somehow come up with, presumably without like doing a location filter or whatever, but we don't know, right? We don't know. Right. But let's say they didn't do that and it's just numbers, and it's like, oh, this guy happened to have, you know, to be local to this. He has a reason to be right by this place. That's a very different conversation than like, oh, this guy out in Oklahoma, you know, it looks like it matches him, but we can't even put him anywhere near the place.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And that's why I was like asking those questions, because it was like, well, what are we talking about? Are we talking about they had Faust DNA and they wanted to try to match it? Or he was a suspect and then they're trying to pin it on him? And it's like, man, if you just take this DNA and their algorithm says, here's a profile, put it into CODIS, and it puts it into CODIS, which is, you know, this gigantic database. And it's like, oh yeah, that belongs to this guy who happens to be right there.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I mean, the odds have to be astronomical. But again, at the same time, I have to acknowledge, you know, I was going to say the odds had to be astronomical, but I don't know.
Right.
Because we don't know how they are.
Because you don't know what the black box has inside it. Yeah.
And it is baffling to me, you know, everything, you know, Daubert and Fry hearings, things we've heard about in other cases where you're able to challenge the science of something to say, you know, whether or not it's legitimate. The fact that, you know, that's such a strict standard in so many states, and that this one, they're just like, trust us. And the courts are like, okay. Like, yeah. What? Yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah. And that should be, and I think that's just to tie this up in a little bow, like, you know, Bob is coming at it, like, you have a general interest and curiosity and passion for the legal system in general. Zach and I obviously are also very interested. We show up here every week. We want to talk about it. We want to be involved. Bob is a defense attorney. He is protecting the Constitution, in his words. He has a different motivation. I mean this in a positive way, to not just be really focusing in on a wrongful conviction, but in fact, looking at the constitutional merit and protection that needs to happen, even if you think someone is guilty. I mean, look at his dad. He defended John Wayne Gacy. They don't get much more guilty than that. So it's just, but there should be people pushing and testing and pressing all of the different sides, including victim advocacy. You know, I'll listen to a podcast that's really advocating for victims, and they will be really worried about, you know, pushing too hard against, oh, this is a junk science and this isn't a junk science. And, you know, someone on the victim side who's very interested in the prosecution of a perpetrator is like, why are you making it harder for these bad guys to get caught? Bad people to get caught.
Yeah.
And they should be asking those questions. Like, we should all, I believe that everyone from every perspective should be showing up to test all of these edges and blurry boundaries and all of that. It's not fair for it to just be like one side. But the question is, who has the power and how do we find a balance there? Right. So, anyway, yeah. I don't know. I find it all really interesting.
I just want to point out, Lynn put in our chat that she said, Faust said they kissed at a restaurant the day before. So that's interesting to me because it actually kind of complicates things. Now, I didn't read about them saying that in the trial, so I don't know where that came out or if it just wasn't reported on. But one, so if that's true, then that would mean that the algorithm was right. Although, you know, the idea of DNA, and we talked about this in the Bynum case, how long can DNA last in the mouth? It's usually not very long. But also I'm curious, like, when did he say that? Did they interview him and say, do you know this woman? And he's like, oh yeah, I know her. And I kissed her the day before. Or was it like, nope, never met her. Never seen her. Never seen that one before in my life. Well, your DNA's in her mouth. Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you. That's because I kissed her. You know, that's,
right.
You know, yeah. I'd be really interested to know how
can
that
you
played
prove,
out.
Can you prove an existing relationship with this person, friendship or otherwise, now that conversation is happening? And again, I don't know anything about the case, so.
Yeah,
I'm the
and
last
is it a good point too that
opining.
We, you know, we haven't touched on? We did touch on it on the episode that, you know, the boyfriend's DNA was on the ligature, oral, and vaginal swab, and he claims they hadn't been together in 10 days.
I think he was just on one swab, right? He was just on the anal swab, I think, is what Bob said.
Oh yeah, I don't. I'm just reading what Lynn wrote here.
I see.
But yeah, like ignoring that is problematic for me too.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I know. Interesting case. I can't speak too intelligently about it because I don't know much about it other than what I can read on the interwebs and what Bob told me. But it's a super interesting case.
And then you guys talked a little bit about the Bart McNeil case and then the Aaron Spencer case, but didn't really get too deep into the weeds on those.
I'm really anxious to hear him cover Bart McNeil because I had mentioned on the show, like, I've looked into that case more than cursory, but not in depth. And I just remember coming away from it like, man, I think this guy did it. Like, there was so many, there was too much evidence pointed towards him. But I didn't know what I think Bob had mentioned that, you know, the woman who he was accusing of it ended up doing the exact same thing to another kid. That's probably,
yeah. No,
it's gonna
that
be
was
really interesting to hear. Cause what I do remember, it was a very complex case. It was really, there was a lot of layers to it. So I can't wait to hear Bob unpack that one.
Yeah, no, I'm super curious about that too.
Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pre-game podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
All right, cool. Well, let's move into some things that we got in from listeners. Christine says, have you finished listening to Proof? As a Michigan resident, I'm curious if you can answer their call to action, or is it really a Kalamazoo resident call, i.e. elections? And what does your dad think?
So my dad doesn't know anything about it, you know, other than me having that one conversation with him. But, you know, it was 50 years ago when he lived in Kalamazoo. Yeah, I haven't had any conversations with him since then. I did finish it, although I haven't finished all of their sidebar episodes. And I actually re-listened to the last episode again today when I was at the gym, because I was like, I don't remember, and maybe I missed it again, like what the call to action was. I mean, it was.
I think Kevin,
unless it came out in a sidebar episode.
Yeah, it was a sidebar episode. I think Kevin said in this last episode, the last episode, which was a sidebar episode, I believe Kevin was saying, you know, this is something that will get, well, you know, let's keep the spotlight on this. Michigan residents certainly can do their part to reach out and let their local authorities know that they're aware of some very disturbing developments in this old cold case team, and that they should really take a strong look at that and try to put a little bit of public pressure on from that side, or at least keep it in the zeitgeist, so to speak.
It's one of those where it was like I got behind and I was listening, and then I went to catch up and I was like, oh, I've got a few, because I had a long drive this weekend. So I did some, that was my go-to to get, that I wanted to get caught up on. But I was like, I don't have time for all of them. I'm just going to listen to all like the main episodes.
Got it.
Yeah. So I caught up on those. But man, the work that she does is.
They all do, all three of them.
Yeah. It's fascinating. And it reminds me, I meant to reach out to her because I know like they were trying to get a hold. I can't remember the guy's name. The one guy that was, I've lost all the names. I've just lost everything. But there was the guy that was the suspect. And then in the case, and then he was a CI, and then they ended up.
Well, they got him. I mean, they did talk to him.
Well, in the last episode, though, they were trying to talk to him again, and he never showed up. But anyway, I was going to reach out to them and be like, if you ever need somebody to go talk to him, I'm an hour down the road.
Oh, you should. You definitely should.
Happy to.
Absolutely. Oh, please. Yeah, please do. We would all love for you to reach out and offer that up. Natasha says, have you thought of investigating any unsolved crimes at all, or is this too hard to get information from law enforcement because they're still active cases?
It's tough. It would almost have to be something where like a family member that had a lot of information. This just came up actually in my conversations with my students, because, you know, one of them, Gracie, her group is covering an unsolved murder. And it's like, we always run into the same thing where, you know, she got some interviews and she was able to talk to them, but this is a 40-year-old cold case. And, you know, once we go filing for the FOIA request to get the documents, we get the same BS we always get. We're like, well, it's still an open investigation. It's like, give me a break. You're not doing anything. It's 40 years.
Right.
You're not doing anything. Like, there's DNA you could be testing. There's all these things you could be doing. You're not doing anything, but they can always use that to hold it back. So it becomes difficult because, you know, if we end up without access to records, it's like, where do you go from there? So that's always been my problem with covering cold cases and unsolved cases. Because there's plenty that, you know, Jeanette Robertson's case is a perfect example from the Underestimated podcast. You know, that's an unsolved. But with that one, the state police detective that's working on it, and he is actively working on it, we were able to convince him to give us a lot of records that, you know, and he was very careful. You know, he basically sat down with the FOIA department with the state police and hand went through with them, like what you can release, what has to be redacted and all that. But he was willing to, you know, and it was cool because he was like, you know, hey, if you guys can add something to this and you can help, then let's, you know, I can't give you everything, but I can give you a lot.
Yeah.
But that's pretty rare. So it has to be a certain set of circumstances. I would have to know that we had access to, you know, because like even in Jeanette's case, you know, it would be difficult to really even further. And that's part of what Chelsea ran into to further dig into it, because he gave us like the files, but like literally like every single name is redacted out of them because it's open, which is understandable. But also it's like, well, this seems like a good lead. We would want to go talk to this person, but we have no idea who this person is. Uh-huh. You know, so there's a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Laura, I think we were sort of talking around it or talking about it with the Faust case. Laura said, I thought the discussion about DNA in the victim's mouth was fascinating with respect to your conversation with Bob. Kudos to you, Bob Ruff, for bringing up the concept that it's massively unlikely that DNA from an algorithm would randomly point to somebody who lived close by and had a record. Any idea how long DNA might be able to last inside someone's mouth and still be able to produce a full profile?
So I looked into this and researched it a lot during the Bynum case, during our season 17 case. I don't remember the specifics, but I remember it was like, it was something like, you know, it is possible that it could hang around for 24 hours, but there were so many variables. Like that assumes they didn't eat, they didn't brush their teeth, they didn't gargle, they didn't, you know, it's like if somehow there was DNA in someone's mouth while they were still alive for, you know, 24 hours. I mean, in general, it's like pretty much once you've eaten, drank something, brushed your teeth, whatever, because your body's the way it produces saliva and it's just constantly washing it out. So it's pretty unlikely, because, you know, like we had that, there was the DNA from, I think it was Liz's swab in our season 17 case in her mouth. And it was like, It's just so unlikely that that came any time other than like within a very short time right before death. But it's just one of those things, like anything else. When you research, you know, I've got Dr. Spitz's book out there and all kinds of online research, and you read all about it and you dig deep into it. And there's always the caveat where it's like, there's always a possibility if the conditions are perfect that it could be. And since we don't know the exact conditions, you can't rule out, you can't say definitively, well, it would have been, if it's past 2 hours, then no, not possible. There isn't a hard line like that.
Right. Okay, let's talk about Songbird for just a moment again. Sarah G says, given that Julia and Jade were the only two at home, the police found no evidence of an intruder. There was evidence of an attempt to clean up. There was physical evidence that implicated Julia. And Julia repeatedly and with much detail lied about going to Walmart. What were the Marion police supposed to do except charge Julia with Jade's murder? The police are supposed to follow the evidence, and the evidence pointed to Julia.
Yeah, I mean, without, you know, really digging into the case, it's, you know, I can definitely see that point. I'm still not convinced of her innocence. But then there was also the stuff that Bob brought up, you know, that, which I guess we didn't know about until now, because I don't remember if I even completely finished Songbird Road.
I did. And I know that we found out then about the person who showed up at that couple's house. For sure, that's not new information. I believe the clump of hair, the alleged potential clump of hair mm-hmm. in Jade's hand, that to me felt like a big holy shit. If it is that.
I have a weird thing about that. And maybe I'm just overthinking this. So Jade had a clump of hair in her hand. At least this is what we're presuming at the moment, and they're saying, well, this should be tested, which I agree, if there is a clump of hair it should be tested. But if it's not, the intruder as described, wearing all black mask, how there's no hair to grab.
That's a good point.
If the intruder is described as it's described
mm-hmm.
by these two individuals that saw this intruder, there's no hair to grab.
Yeah, that makes, unless there was, you know, a mullet sticking out the back something.
I mean, there's, I guess there is ways, but I just, that was my first.
That's a good point, though.
The first visual I had was this guy and in all black and had a mask on. And you, there's no, I mean, I'm not saying there couldn't be touch DNA. There couldn't be something, but I don't feel like there's a way to grab hair.
Did he have a mat, like something pulled all the way over, or was it just a hoodie, like with a hood up? Because then that could just
come down.
I thought
she said mask.
I can't remember. I didn't have time to listen again.
Did we know on the podcast about, like, I know there was like the weird guy that went to the neighbor's house, but did we know about the report of someone running through the backyard?
I thought that we did. I just don't remember knowing that there was, and maybe someone in the chat will remember more clearly. I think that we did. I remember that, but I didn't remember that there was a potential actual 911 call that Bob was talking about in your conversation with him recently, that there was
right.
potentially something, but that they're not able to track it down, which seems hard. I mean, that doesn't look, that doesn't seem helpful.
Yeah. The guy's not talking. Cause that, you know, if that pans out in, it sounds like it does. There was a 911 call that said that, you know, then all of a sudden it sort of takes. So like, I see the point Sarah's making. Like, if you look at it and from that perspective, there's like, you know, the lying about Walmart and the evidence, you know, the evidence at the house, though, you know, and on the person, you know, she lived there. You know, there's like, you can look at them both ways, but I can see why there's like this preponderance of evidence that points towards her. And it's like, clearly it's her. And I could see that perspective. But then for me, if this 911 call, you know, if she's saying that it's, you know, somebody dressed in all black and she was there and they had this fight and they left, and then right at that same time on this kind of desolate road, neighbor calls 911 and says, hey, someone dressed in all black just ran through my backyard. Well, that changes things for me, because that's enough for me, not enough for me to say, well, yeah, so clearly she's innocent, but it's enough to say, okay, then can these things that you're talking about be explained away from a different reason? Like, do people sometimes lie for in investigations like this, not because they're guilty, but for other reasons? Yeah, they do sometimes. Is, you know, physical evidence at the scene for someone who lives there, could that be explained away? Yeah, it could be explained away. It's almost like, am I motivated to try to explain this stuff away if everything's pointing there and there's no other avenue of investigation? Mm-hmm. I'm probably less motivated to wonder why or how or if there's an innocent explanation.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's what is, I guess I would say, corroborating evidence that there was an intruder there, just like she said, well, then that, and I'm just being transparent here because it probably, you know, you should be looking at all angles all the time anyway. But to be very transparent, like, that causes me to say, okay, well, is there an innocent explanation possible for these things, or is it just not going to matter? And I think that it, there could be. I think that it's not an open and shut case against her, and there's this other evidence out there. So it's enough to make me question it and want to know more, for sure. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I agree. And yeah, Zach, I'm curious what you think, but and the evidence of the cleanup, I just don't remember well enough. I definitely remember all the Walmart stuff and the, like, she threw away
the
all of this stuff, but it was
station.
Like a small little trash bag that you do see an image of and you're like, wait, that's so tiny. I don't know if that's the evidence of the cleanup that Sarah's talking about, or if there was more evidence of a cleanup attempt inside the house. I don't remember. So I'll have to re-listen to everything, because of course it made me curious. But I definitely remember walking away from the end of that, of season one, being like, boy, oh boy, it really sounds like there's more going on here than what the jury heard and kind of what, you know, the takeaway was supposed to be.
And like Jennifer in the chat is saying too, one big problem or red flag with it is too, that what I do remember is that there was like no investigation. It was like they just immediately decided, nope, it was her. And it's, so anytime you get officers, the detectives that get tunnel vision like that and aren't looking for other possibilities, that's always something that gets my hackles up.
Yeah. Yeah. Beyond that, Amy says, not a question, just a huge thank you for the advice you gave for my daughter who turned 18. Life got busy, so I was just getting caught up on the podcast. Heard you both answer the question with such honesty. It was truly touching. And she says, Zach, you'll be happy to know I had already given her the face and hand tattoo lecture. She picked a very pretty, fine line hummingbird tattoo somewhere that can 100% be covered easily and is only shown if she wants to. And if you want to see a picture of that, it's on the Facebook post as well. It's a very pretty, delicate Excellent. Hummingbird tattoo. Yeah, so that dates back to a couple of follow-ups.
I have not seen it yet, but I will definitely go look.
Yeah.
I will absolutely go look. But I'm really happy to hear that. I'm glad they were ahead of me.
You're right.
There you go. And that's all I have. Anybody else got anything else?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
It was, I always enjoy talking. I'm looking forward to talking to Bob again tomorrow night. So you guys definitely check out if you're watching this live and you are able to do that. I'll try to remember to put it on my socials tomorrow. I know Bob will put it on, you know, Bob's all over social media. But yeah, Tuesday evening, I will be on with Bob. And yeah, so I'm thinking Throwback Thursday. We'll hear from last year's Underestimated crew. And then we're going to hear from this year's crew on Sunday. And I'll go ahead and drop an extra episode so we can start talking about what's the underestimated cases on here. So yeah, a lot going on this week. And also I'm supposed to tell you guys, because I did spend the weekend with Mike. Good old Mike Bussing wanted me to tell everybody hello, and then he misses you all.
Yeah.
And he appreciates people still asking about him.
Cool.
And with that being said, that's all we got, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.